Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Now broadcasting from behind the good old stainless steel working class microphone, Tom Hartman here with you. Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Happy Friday, TGIF. Shabbat Shalom. Huma Mubarak. I'm going to have to look that one up again. Arabic greeting. I know the last half is Mubarak. Anyhow, greetings and happy Friday. And it wouldn't be Friday without Senator Bernie Sanders with us. Our Brunch with Bernie hour. He'll be taking your calls at 866-303-2270. And, of course, our live chat room, TomHartman.com, Bernie's website, Sanders.Senate.gov. And, Bernie, welcome to the show.
Great to be with you, Tom.
Or welcome to your show, this hour. Our show, you and me. And, Bernie, the campaign, you know, for a long time, Barack Obama and John McCain were both promising to run a high-minded campaign. And then John McCain, as soon as he hired Steve Schmidt, Karl Rove's protege, immediately got down in the mud. And Barack Obama is firing back now, although it seems that his firing back is pretty evidence-based, and McCain's rebuttal to his firing back is back to the old personality spheres.
Well, Tom, this is what I think you have. Obviously, I think most Americans would like a campaign to be about the issues impacting their lives. To take a look around what's going on in our country and ask the candidates, what are you going to do? For example, I mean, I think most listeners know that the middle class in America is collapsing, poverty is increasing, and the only people who have done well under Bush's economic policies and his tax breaks and his trade agreements have been the very richest people in America. So you end up with a situation where the top one-tenth of 1% now earn more income than do the bottom 50%, et cetera, et cetera. All right? So you throw that on the table. And then I think a rational discourse is, Senator McCain, what are you going to do about it? How do you rebuild the middle class? How do you lower the poverty rates? How do you create more economic equality in America? Mr. Obama, what are your views on those issues? Unfortunately, given the nature of media and political campaigning in America, that ain't going to happen. And that is very sad. And that works very, very much to the Karl Rove school of politics and to the Republicans in general. Because I think if you took an objective, a dispassionate look at what the Republican right-wing ideology is, clearly, it is economic policy which benefits the rich and large corporations against the vast majority of the people. That's the reality. Now, would you like to be campaigning and do 30-second ads on the slogan, more tax breaks for billionaires and let's cut back on Social Security benefits? Vote for John McCain for president. Frankly, I don't think that that is a good 30-second ad. So given the reality that McCain's policies are very, very close to what Bush's are, which have been a disaster for the vast majority of our people, what do you campaign on? What do you talk about? Do you talk about a healthcare system, continuation of policies which lead to the disintegration of our healthcare system, more and more people uninsured, underinsured, and cost soaring? Are you going to say, we need four more years of Bush's health policies? I don't think you do that. So what you have a real problem. If you can't campaign on more tax breaks for billionaires, if you can't campaign on continuing the war in Iraq year after year after year at $10 billion a month, if you can't campaign on privatizing Social Security or cutting back on Social Security benefits, Tom, what do you talk about? Well, what you clearly talk about and what Karl Rove's people, this guy Schmidt, is very, very smart, what you got to do is you got to attack the other guy. And you know what? It works.
Yeah, and the attacks can be, you know, downright scurrilous. I mean, look at the race car, the Willie Horton ads that Bush Sr. ran. You know,
you create an image. How many people know Barack Obama personally? Not very
few
people.
Yeah.
So you recreate the guy. He is a pointy-headed intellectual. He is arrogant. Do you know what he did? I was taught he vacationed in Hawaii.
Yeah.
I mean, how arrogant and elitist can you be actually going to Hawaii? Meanwhile, John McCain is just your average, you know, son of an admiral, guy who, you know, marries a woman who's worth, what, $100 million?
Yeah, it's 200 now because they sold out to the
couple of, just your average guy, just like George Bush. George is out in the garden there mowing the lawn and cutting his brush. Just your average son of a president of the United States, a really kind of nice guy. And that's what we're going to focus on. Well, John Kerry, you know, again, an intellectual. What is he, windsurf?
He's French.
How can you possibly vote for somebody who windsurfs when you have another guy who's out cutting brush? It's your average American. And that is what they do, and they do it very well. And because you have a media which is almost incapable of focusing on serious issues like our trade policy and why it is that we have lost millions of good-paying jobs as companies go to China and other countries where people are paid pennies an hour, something that McCain believes in fervently. He actually went to Colombia to advocate his belief in unfettered free trade. Do you think the media is you think you're going to have great discussions on NBC and CBS about our trade policy? It's too complicated. It's too hard. It takes too long.
Well, and not only that, MSNBC or NBC and CBS and ABC have interlocking boards of directors with some of the largest corporations in America that are benefiting from this corporate free trade.
Absolutely. Jeff Immelt, who was the president or the CEO, I'm sorry, of General Electric a number of years ago, he made a statement. He said, when I, Jeff Immelt, head of GE, look at the future of GE, I see China, China, and China.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so you got all of that bias from the corporate media. You have a TV which assumes that the American people can't listen to anything for more than 12 seconds, that campaigns are about celebrity, that really selecting a president is not much different than selecting an Academy Award winner. Who do you like for the Academy Award? Who do you want to see win the NFL or the NBA championships? Who do you want to see president of the United States? Well, you know what? It's different. This election and any election, it's not about John McCain or Barack Obama. Trust me. The loser of this election will be just fine. They're both millionaires. They both have a good job in the United States Senate. They're great families. They're fine. But this election is about is the middle class of this country. It's about working families. It's about the children and what kind of future they have. Are we going to join the rest of the industrialized world and have health care for every man, woman, and child? Well, I don't agree with Obama's proposal. I would go further than that. But he believes that all Americans should have health care. Does McCain? No, he doesn't. Should we give tax breaks to the middle class who need it, or do you give trillions of dollars in tax breaks to the upper 1% who most certainly don't need it, drive up the national debt, which hits us internationally from a financial perspective and leaves a great debt to our kids and grandchildren? Who believes in what? What about Social Security? What McCain wants to do is says anything is on the table. You know what that is? That's code. That's code for cutting back on benefits. It is code for raising the retirement age. And most significantly, if he had the votes, which he wouldn't in the Congress, it's code for privatizing Social Security. So everybody feel very comfortable about the stability of the financial markets and your investments? Or do you think you feel a little bit more comfortable knowing that your Social Security check will be there in 20 or 30 years? Yeah. Obama quite correctly says we've got to lift the cap, ask rich people to contribute more into the system so that Social Security will be strong for our kids and our grandchildren. Very sensible approach. Do you want to stay in Iraq at $10 billion a month indefinitely? Or do you want to listen to the president of Iraq who wants a timeline and a support of Obama's position? So I think if you looked, and that's just a few of the issues, if you start looking at the issues, I think it's pretty clear that the vast majority of the people do not support an ideology which benefits the wealthy and large corporations at the expense of the middle class and working families. But that's not the kind of debate that we have. So what you're going to see this degenerate into, and I think, as you indicated, McCain clearly started, and it has worked, Obama's people are going to respond. They're going to try to identify and describe McCain in a certain way. I suspect it may work. But I think the whole process is unfortunate. I understand why Obama has to do what he does. And if I were in his vote, that's what I would do. I'm not going to sit around, get beaten up every day, and lose this enormously important election. But long term, what we have got to demand from the media, from the candidates, from the political parties, is serious discussions on serious issues, and we have a long way to go to reach that goal.
Yeah, yeah, and this is really a structural and systemic problem,
yes,
as much as anything else.
That's right.
And it needs to be approached at a structural and systemic level. And hopefully a Democratic president and a Democratic Congress can begin
that process. We've got a long way to go.
Yeah, we really do. 16 minutes past the hour. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. I think of him as America's senator. He's taking your calls all across the United States, all around the world. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And sanders.senate.gov if you'd like to sign up for Bernie's newsletter or get more information about Senator Bernie Sanders, the independent from Vermont. It's the Tom Hartman Program here on Air America Radio, 16 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Visit us on the web at hartmanradio.com.
On this heart of mine, I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tie that binds. Because you're mine, I walk the line.
21 minutes past the hour, the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the True People's Radio. 866-303-2270, our telephone number for Brunch with Bernie. Our first hour every Friday has been for 4 years or more, as it seems, perhaps a little longer. And Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls. Ready to go for Bernie?
Ready to go.
Okay. Dave in northwestern Indiana, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yes, I want to make a comment that it seems like during the conventions, the Democrats never use their time wisely. They should, many times throughout the thing, you know, like several times an hour, maybe on some things, every speaker should explain that to get control of Congress, they need to tell the people why we have a do-nothing Congress, about the 80 filibusters. And we ought to have them repeat a number of times a Mike Scallion letter to Abramoff saying how they get the wackos out the vote. The wackos are the people who get their information from Christian Right, Christian Radio, Mill, and Internet, and the phone trees. And they ought to come up with a film saying debunking the myth that the Republican, right-wing, conservative corporate media is liberal.
Right.
Show examples of, you know, of how they portray things.
Well, Dave, I think you raise very good points. The simple truth is, and most Americans don't know this, and I think the media does a very poor job in portraying it. If you go up to the average person and you say, how many votes does it take to get legislation passed in the Senate with 100 senators? Well, most people say, well, I guess it takes a majority. It's 51 senators. And if you think that's the case, you're wrong. What it takes in the Senate, under Senate rules, in order to kill debate and get a vote, it takes 60 votes to bring what we call cloture, end of debate, move on to a vote. What the Republicans have done, as Dave has indicated, have done more filibustering than any group in American history who are in the minority in the Senate. It's not 80, it's 90, over 90 filibusters. I just a few weeks ago got onto the floor a bill to make sure that nobody in America goes cold this winter when the price of oil is soaring and people just don't have the income. I don't want people freezing to death in my state of Vermont or any place in the country, and I don't want people dying of heat exhaustion in Arizona or Nevada, where it gets 110 degrees. Well, I won the vote by 50-35. but we lost because we needed 60 votes. And that has happened 90 times. Trent Lott, at the very beginning of the session, when he was the minority leader, made it very clear. He said, we're going to do everything we can to prevent progress from being made, and then we'll say publicly that the Democrats accomplished nothing. Well, they haven't quite succeeded. We have done some good things. We've made some real progress in veterans issues. We've made some progress in environmental programming. We've made some progress in education and other areas. But clearly, we could have done a lot more without those filibusters, and Dave is absolutely right in pointing the finger at people who simply want to stop anything for political purposes.
At the same time, though, Bernie, those have been 90 chances for Harry Reid to do some real high-class political theater that
we
he could drop the ball on.
I would agree. There's no question. In my view, I mean, Reid's problem, and I like Harry Reid, it is if you want to move things, if you have a very long agenda, you can't spend 3 weeks on one issue. But I think we have not done, to answer your question, as good a job as possible in explaining to the American people what a filibuster is about.
Right.
And if they want a filibuster on an important issue, let it go on for 3 or 4 days and nights. And let's be there debating whether we give tax breaks to billionaires or do we take care of kids who don't have any health insurance, whether we give tax breaks to the oil companies or that we move to sustainable energy. Let's have that debate for a week. But Reid is in a very difficult position because he also has to move legislation to get something accomplished.
Yeah, it's sort of do we do this or that. Bob in Scarsdale, New York. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'd like to get to the Obama campaign and have them start right now with a Peace Corps for America. There's a lot of problems that could be solved scientifically by a bunch of very smart people pro bono who would come in and help the Obama campaign. For example, right now there's 440,000 school buses that need a lot of diesel fuel, and it's wrecking the school systems. They can't, some school systems are thinking of going on a 4-day week. Can you
right.
imagine that?
Right.
Because of that. Now, it's, what's his name at Harvard, who's on the, he's economic, Summers, Larry Summers. He's got a lot of talented people he could call up and do operations research and get these things routed differently.
Well, I think, Bob, your point is a good point. There is a lot of brain power in this country, and I don't think we have utilized that as effectively as we might. Now, in terms of the issue that you raised, which is an immediate crisis, we have this problem right here in the state of Vermont, where we're hearing from school districts who just can't afford to fill up the school buses anymore, and they're having to make a decision whether they cut back on classroom education or cut back on fuel to get the kids to school, which is an absurd proposal for the United States of America in the year 2008. One of the things that I think we should be doing as a short-term fix to this problem is to pass legislation which provides help to school districts all over this country in order to pay for the increased cost of fuel so we get kids to school. Long-term, obviously, we have to break our dependency on fossil fuel and move to sustainable energy.
Yeah, amen. 27 minutes past the hour. Senator Bernie Sanders here with us. Our Brunch with Bernie hour. Sanders.Senate.gov, his website. Ours, TomHartman.com, AirAmerica.com. You can also watch our live Tom Vision. And 866-303-2278.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
The hour, the Tom Hartman radio program, talk radio for the rest of us. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. His website, sanders.senate.gov. And, of course, ours is tomhartman.com. However you spell it, we'll get you there, or airamerica.com. And Steve in Grand Rapids, Michigan, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, this is Steve calling. Hey, my question is, Senator, is if you're raising taxes, or if you're not raising taxes, and you're gonna tax the rich more, like the Democrats want, is what happens when you tax the rich more? it goes downhill. The rich gets taxed more. That means that the employers are not able to pay their employees even more. And then the Democrats are going to come up with another year from now saying, let's raise minimum wage so we can raise inflation again. The simple fact is every time we raise taxes on the rich, which I don't agree one bit that we should be giving tax breaks to the rich as far as not letting them pay or anything like that. But I don't agree that we should keep raising the taxes on the rich. They're already paying the taxes that they need.
Okay, Steve, thanks for your thoughts, and let me respectfully disagree with you. What we have and what we have experienced for the last 7.5 years under Bush have been enormous tax reductions for the wealthiest people in this country, amounting to many, many hundreds of billions of dollars. And the theory is, and I think Steve may share that theory, is if you do that, it kind of trickles on down and makes the whole economy better. That's been the whole thrust of Bush's economic policy. Well, I think anybody in this America who has a heartbeat, who knows what's going on, understands that that philosophy has not worked. We have made the richest 1% of the population much, much, much wealthier. We've lowered their taxes. Their incomes have soared. Their wealth has soared. We now have by far the most inequitable distribution of wealth and income of any major country on earth. And while poverty increases and working people see a decline in their incomes. So I don't agree with Steve. I think when you have a situation where the top 0.1% earn more income than the bottom 50%, you have a national debt of $9.5 trillion. I think it is absolutely appropriate not only to rescind Bush's tax breaks for the very richest people in this country, but to ask them to contribute more so that in fact we can have the revenue that we need to rebuild our infrastructure, to build affordable housing, to make sure that we have health care for all people so that we can break our dependency on fossil fuel and move to sustainable energy and provide tax credits to people so they can install solar or wind or geothermal and so forth and so on. So, Steve, I disagree with you. I think it is appropriate at this particular moment in history to target our tax breaks toward the middle class and working families. I think we should rescind these tax breaks for the very richest people in this country and, in fact, ask them to pay more than they currently are.
I'll leave it at that. You're very eloquent, Bernie. Jim in Oakland, California. Oh, Jim, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Okay.
Jim?
Yes, good morning, Senator Sanders. I really enjoy when you're on. One issue that I would have to pick with you is the fact that you said, hey, they talk down whatever the Republicans or Democrats are talking to people. They're somewhat talking down, and they're not really respecting the intelligence of the people. The fact of the matter is, you and I would probably agree that a majority of the Americans are dumb as doorknobs, realistically, and they have the attention span of flies. So you can't really argue with them or really go into a discussion about various issues. You would have to kind of talk in terms of monikers and appeal to their emotionality. And in that regard, I wanted to help the Democrats. They're always being accused of being tax and spend Democrats. I would like to suggest that we give a moniker to the Republicans and call them screw up and lie Republicans, which kind of underscore their incompetence, or screw you and lie Republicans, which underscores the fact that they're getting rid of the middle class.
Well, Jim, I appreciate your thoughts. I don't think it's a question of the American people being dumb, and I don't think it's a question of the American people being uninterested. I think for a variety of factors, A, having a lot to do with who owns the media and the structure of media. You know, I'm a United States senator. It is, in most cases, I have to make a presentation on an issue in less than 7 or 8 seconds and try to do that. It's not possible to do that. So I think, as we indicated earlier, we need to, starting today, do massive amounts of education, serious discussion about the real issues. We have to respect people whose views are different than ours. Steve just called up a moment ago from Michigan. you know, and he worries about asking the rich to pay more in taxes. I don't agree with him, but we respect his point of view, and we should discuss different ideas and see how these ideas impact on policy, how policy impacts on the quality of our life. I think my experience as somebody who's been active in politics in Vermont for many, many years is when I talk to people, we do town meetings all over the place, people want to hear. They want to get an understanding of what's going on in their country, in their state. They want to bring forth their ideas. They want to gain, be part of that discussion. And I think for a lot of reasons, the fact that we have to resort to negative TV ads attacking people's character is a very, very sad day indeed. And I hope that we can, over a period of years, move away from that.
Amen. Howard in Atascadero, California.
Yes, good morning, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. The subject I'd like to speak to is, or make a comment on, is the shortage of officers in the services.
Shortage of officers in the?
In the services.
Military
service.
Yep.
Yeah, why do high-ranking military officers in our services retire at 20 years when they're still young men in their 40s and 50s, and our country spends a fortune for these their education and training at the various service academies, and just when they are at the peak of their careers in experience, we allow them to retire at great retirement benefits, and what do they do with all that talent our country needs? They go to work as lobbyists for the military-industrial complex or on the board of directors of the same military companies. Let's increase the retirement service age to 30 years or at least 25. Also, not permit lobbying for the military complex for at least 5 years after retirement. We could improve, I believe, our military talent and strength of the services, save millions of dollars, and over a period of years, even billions. What say you?
Well, Howard, I think you raise two important issues. Number one, we're seeing a lot of retirements from high-ranking officials in the military. I think at least at some point that had a lot to do with concerns about the war in Iraq, to tell you the truth, that a lot of these guys were not enthusiastic about the nature of that war, and we saw a lot of retirements. But that is a real issue. You can't have the kind of military we want unless you have experienced, well-educated, well-trained people in leadership positions on the field. And I think Howard raises a good point. I'm not quite sure what the solution is, but Howard raises an interesting issue. But what I am quite sure about is the second point that he's making, is that there is an extraordinary revolving door, which is an issue that we are looking at right now. Tom, you and I have talked about President Eisenhower and his discussion as he left office in 1960 about the military-industrial complex and the dangers that posed for our country. And my view is that man was incredibly prescient back in 1960. And if he saw what was going on today, he would be stunned, because the problem is a lot worse than he even anticipated that it might be. Yeah. And what you have right now, as Howard indicates, is you have generals and admirals and people from who have worked as civilians at the Department of Defense, etc., then just leave the military and move over to the large military contractors, and are now, with their intimate knowledge of the military, working as lobbyists, coming up with weapon systems, renewing their old acquaintances. I think it's a very, very dangerous trend, and it's somewhat responsible for a $515 billion military budget above and beyond the war in Iraq. So I think Howard makes a very good point, and that is an issue that we are addressing, how you stop this revolving door of generals and admirals now working in the private sector.
Sean in Vancouver, you're on with Senator Bernie Sanders. We've got about a minute before the break here.
Senator Sanders, from my perspective, there's really nothing more horrifying than the status quo. So why in God's name, when our infrastructure is rotting, when we have horrific levels of violence in our cities, why in God's name would we want to help Wall Street to preserve so-called stability, as we did last March? I know no one has done more than you have in the Senate and in the Congress to be a good voice on the left. But we had people like Barney Frank and Senator Dodd actually working in collusion with these people to stabilize this economy when to get the pendulum to swing, you need to let the business cycle work like it did in the 30s.
Well, Scott, the difficulty with that, in fairness to Dodd and to Frank, is they are placed in a position, and it's an impossible position to be in, because you're doomed if you do and you're doomed if you don't. If you don't act, there could be massive financial dislocation. And I'm not quite sure that we want to go back to the 1930s with all of the suffering that people experienced. We don't.
The problem, I'd say, is that because Reagan stopped enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act and we've had all these loopholes drilled into our regulations, that we've got companies that are too big to fail, and we shouldn't have that. It shouldn't be that way.
That's exactly.
Yeah, but anyway, 45 minutes past the hour. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. Brunch with Bernie on the Tom Hartman Program.
This is The Moment. Continuing live coverage from Denver of the Democratic National Convention on Air America and AirAmerica.com. Our time is now.
If it came along, everyone that knew him knew which side that he'd be on. He never was a hero for this county's shining light, but you could always find him standing up for what he thought was right. He'd say, "You've got to stand for something, or you'll fall for anything.
Nine and a half minutes before the hour of the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the place where despair is not an option. Senator Bernie Sanders with us, sanders.senate.gov, his website. The independent senator from Vermont taking your calls in our Brunch with Bernie hour. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan, listening to WTKG. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders. Rick.
Yes, good day. Senator, I wanted to ask you, been following the situation with Secretary Rice going over to Baghdad and somehow working out a tentative timetable, and if you recall, that very word of timetable for withdrawal was pretty much considered tantamount to treason whenever a Democrat or a progressive brought it up. And I just wonder, getting back to the intelligence of the American people, if they're going to believe that it's treasonous for Democrats to suggest a timetable, but it's somehow okay if the Bush administration suggests it.
Well, I think, Rick, obviously what that's about is the American people, by very large numbers, want to bring our troops home, and they understand that the way you do that is through a timetable. They understand that you now have the president of Iraq, Mr. Mazgli, virtually endorsing Obama's plan. So you've got to do something. And what the Bush people are now doing is saying, hey, we now support, hey, we're part of that process as well. Count us in. We want to bring the troops home. But clearly it has been a long, hard struggle to get them to recognize that the Iraqi people have got to take responsibility for their own country and are now in a position to do that. And when we talk about the war in Iraq, please don't ever forget, it's not just 4,100 plus dead and tens of thousands of wounded. It is the fact that we are spending huge sums of money that we desperately need to rebuild our country, our infrastructure. We need to move to sustainable energy. We talked a moment ago that there are school districts in the United States of America today who can't afford the fuel to get kids to school, and we're spending $10 billion every single month in Iraq. I think Bush and his friends have gotten that message. They read the polls, and they're now going to be talking about bringing our troops home. You'll hear McCain talking about that as well soon enough.
Proudly. I've for a couple of years been saying they're going to declare victory before the election, and they're also going to jack the economy up before the election.
But one of the prices before they declare victory is to take a hard look at what's happening in Afghanistan and increasingly in Pakistan as well.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Dave in Indianapolis, Indiana, you're on with Senator Bernie Sanders. Dave?
Yes.
Yeah, you're on the air.
Oh, okay. Mr. Sanders, I'm a truck driver. Now, I've talked to several different talk shows, and they all ignore this issue of term limitations. You know, you guys were talking earlier about the military getting out, and not, you know, we spent all that money on the military. We've done the same thing on people that are supposed to be representing us. And every time I talk about term limits, though, everybody just blows that right off because it's a verboten subject.
Well,
and
I'd
like
verboten.
To know on that.
Dave, let me just stay on the line here. It's
okay.
Not verboten. The Republicans campaigned on it for years, and they wanted it until they gained power in the House and Senate, and then they forgot about it. I have never agreed with term limits because if you don't like the people you're electing, there is a term limit. Throw them out of office. That's the term limit. Dave, the issue in politics, it's not term limits. It's not that the people in Washington are evil, horrible people. The issue is you have a political system that is dominated by big money. When the oil companies, and if you're a truck driver, you know what the cost of gas is and diesel is. When the oil companies can spend hundreds of millions of dollars on lobbying and campaign contributions and end up getting tax breaks while they enjoy record-breaking profits, the problem is the influence of big money. And you should be looking at which side the candidates are and your elected officials are. Are they on the side of big money or on the side of working people? And I think term limits have really not a whole lot to say about that issue.
Okay.
Well, my objection there is term limits, if we could ever get them in place, and I understand we won't ever get them in place because of the good old boy system. I understand there are people that desperately want to go in, and they want term limitations, and they'll say they'll campaign for it. But when they get in there, they get into this situation where the good old boys, you know, I think there's been some people there since, what, 1948 in the Senate, for example, and they're empowered, and what they do is they run the show. And if these
What I'm suggesting to you is you got some good senators and you got some bad senators, good House members and bad House members. If you don't like, you have to develop what the criteria is. Look at how they vote. Look at where they get their money. And I'm suggesting to you that I don't think term limits are the solution. If you don't like the guy who's representing you, throw him out. Put in somebody new. But the issue is the power of money in the political process. And I think that's where I think we've got to focus.
Right. Term limits is really big government telling you who can or can't represent you.
And the answer
if you want to flip it into a conservative frame, do you really want the government saying, no, you can't have this person who's doing a great job representing you?
Right.
That's a problem. Ryan in Miami, we got a minute before the end of the show here, Ryan.
Hello. Quick concern with the Democratic tax break. Right now, I'm in Miami. I'm a single father making $200,000. According to Barack Obama, I'm rich. But
now, you've got another $50,000 to go before he says you're rich.
$150,000. But even so, how do you adjust to different living standards across the nation? Because it's a lot more expensive to live in Miami or New York than it is to live in Houston or elsewhere around the nation. How do you adjust?
Well, Ryan, I mean, I appreciate the problem, but you know, for people who are making families who are making $250,000, I'm not saying everybody's living in utopia. But the truth is that we have many people in my state and a hell of a lot of people in Florida who are trying to get by on $25,000 or $30,000 or $40,000. People who can't afford to go to college, people we need to have an infrastructure that we need to rebuild. We have all kinds of problems. And when you're seeing a growing gap between the people on top and everybody else, I think it is simply fair and right that the people on top, the more you make, the more you should pay in taxes. That is my view, and you may disagree with me, but that is my view.
Yeah, and I share it. Thank you. Bernie, thanks so much again for being with us.
Good to be with you, Tom.
It is always an honor. Senator Bernie Sanders, sanders.senate.gov, his website. Check it out. Sign up for his newsletter. Great information there. Tom Hartman here with you. Next up, Jerome Corsi. This should be entertaining.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, and Dr. Jerome Corsi on the line with us, the co-author of Unfit for Command, Swift Boat Veterans Speak Out Against John Kerry, and numerous other books. His new book, The Obama Nation, Leftist Politics and the Cult of Personality. Jerome Corsi, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tom. Good to be with you.
Good to have you back with us. The First of all, I'm curious about this lawsuit against Regnery Publishing. You're a co-litigant in this, are you not?
Yes, I am, and I don't have any comment about it.
No comment? Let's speak more generically then. It seems that on the right there is this the ability to take a book, a relatively obscure book, and get it on the New York Times list. I've never seen anything like that on the left. You want to talk about the process?
Well, I wrote a book, and a lot of people bought it. That's about it. The whole idea of bulk sales, there is no conservative buyer who's putting up a lot of money to buy books and put them in a warehouse. It's not happening. Uh-huh. Never did.
Okay, but that's the basis of your lawsuit, isn't it?
No, I'm not talking about the lawsuit.
I see. Okay.
No comment. That, Tom, is no comment.
All right. Are you still on parole for your 2003 child pornography arrest?
Pardon me?
The bio site, PSSHT.com, biography/biography, sponsored by Salon.com, says, in early 2003, authorities indicate Corsi was indicted for the distribution of child pornography.
Records
show the scandal
not.
Mushroomed when, after being found guilty for peddling kiddie porn, Corsi was handed a lenient sentence that included no prison time. Conspiracy theories filled Ohio newspapers for weeks.
Not true. Totally, totally made up. Not true. Nothing, no substance to it whatsoever.
Uh-huh.
I've never been arrested in my life.
I see. Okay.
Any more trash you want to throw my way, Tom?
Well, I'm
happy.
This is the stuff, you know, I'm finding the stuff on the web, and it's...
If you want to be a trash thrower, just let me know. I'll sit back and wait for the trash.
Okay, fine. Questions, did the draft board that you showed up and dragged to avoid military service, is that true, during the Vietnam War?
Tom, are you taking drugs?
No, I've been researching you on the web, the same way that you were researching Barack Obama.
You know, you're reading sites that must be on drugs. I showed up my draft board, ready to be inducted that day, and they rejected me. I have eczema. I've had it since I was a child.
Uh-huh.
And
okay.
That's the truth. And then, but Tom, I think, you know, go get drug tested. This problem can be solved.
I'm sure it can. Do you still believe that, as many have reported, that and you said that Islam is a worthless and dangerous and satanic religion?
Well, I thought we were going to have a good time today, Tom.
This is a serious question. I think that we really need to change the discourse about religion.
I've apologized for that. It was not meant as a true reflection of my beliefs. I stated so at the time. I said it was written as a comment on Free Republic. I said I wouldn't write any more comments anywhere like that. I haven't. If you read my book, Atomic Iran, you'd see I say that Islam is a legitimate religion. I walked 200 miles with the Iranians, all Muslims, in support of freedom in their country.
Then why did you say that in the first place? Just, you know, here we are.
If you read what I said about those comments were written to be provocative. They weren't meant as a serious intent of my beliefs. They were published on Free Republic.
So it was like satire?
Some was satire. Some was meant to be ironic. Some was simply provocative. I've disavowed them all. Mm-hmm. They don't reflect my true beliefs now. They don't then. And I don't write anything like that anymore.
Is it true that you're drawing on your background as an investment advisor and financial services marketing specialist, to quote your Wikipedia entry, to encourage investment in the Amero as the new North American Union currency? You wrote a book about this, I believe.
No comment. No. Actually, I was commenting on a book written by Robert Pastor, who's a professor of political science at American University, who, in his book, Building a North American Community, called for the Amero to be a new North American currency. The idea was created by Herbert Gruvel, an economist at the Fraser Institute, and I wrote about what they said.
Yeah. So, I know that you're a fan of, you know, if things are out there, they should be addressed, and they should be addressed head on. Web reports indicate that you got a light sentence on your child porn arrest, and some people are wondering if you bought your way out of a prison term by taking Judge Murky on an all-expenses-paid tour of Thailand's child sex district.
This has been reported by numerous
people.
All just trash, Tom. All just trash. I have never been arrested.
So are you being swift-boated here?
Pardon me?
Are you being swift-voted by these people?
I don't know. I think they're just making... I think they're on drugs. Tom, go get drug tested. It's okay.
I'm not asserting this.
There's a cure for your problem, Tom. There's a cure. People who are inclined to believe this trash, There's a clear, there's a cure for your problem.
Yeah, okay. All right.
I hope you get over it.
How, you know, I've noticed that a number, we're talking with Dr. Jerome Corsi, his new book, The Obama Nation, Leftist Politics and the Cult of Personality, the website, worldnetdaily.com. And I've noticed that not only has the corporate media been relatively hostile toward you, Larry King, I think, probably did the kindest interview with you, but others, you know, were pretty much beating you up on TV that I was watching. But it seems that, with the possible exception of probably Sean Hannity, that even Republicans are starting to put some distance between themselves and you. What do you attribute that to?
I have no idea. I'm not a Republican. I criticize Republicans a lot, too. My last book, The Late Great USA, Coming Merger with Mexico and Canada, criticized President Bush and the Bush administration very strongly for the Security and Prosperity Partnership. People don't like to be criticized, I guess. And so, especially Barack Obama, between my book and the cartoon page that was written as a satire in The New Yorker, I think the Obama campaign's gotten unglued.
You don't think it's things like these scurrilous allegations that are floating around the web about your arrests and your unsavory behavior before the draft board and things?
I've never been arrested.
I see. Okay. Been charged, indicted, picked up?
Nope, never been, none
yeah.
of those.
Okay, all right.
In 40 years of driving, I think I've had maybe one, maybe two traffic tickets.
Yeah. Your college dissertation, you know, was titled Prior Restraint, Prior Punishment, and Political Dissent, A Moral and Legal Evaluation.
Right.
Yeah. Is this based on a penchant for sadomasochism that you picked up as an elected member of Phi Beta Kappa? That's the spanking fraternity, isn't it, that you were a member of?
I'm a member of Phi Beta Kappa. My dissertation was on the prior restraint, prior punishment issue, which is...
This is S&M, isn't it?
Pardon me?
This is S&M, isn't it?
No. It's the New York Times versus Sullivan case, where the government has reason to believe that something could be published that would be in it somehow dangerous to be published, like in the Pentagon Papers case, which was what, you know, the New York Times cases have been about,
right,
the most recent ones. And the decisions have been that the First Amendment does not restrain the publication of such documents. In other words, before it's published, you can't use a prior restraint or prior punishment.
Right.
You can't put somebody into prison before they commit a crime.
So then you're no longer involving yourself with S&M activities.
Tom, I've never been S&M activities, and your question is patently, it just, I really, you know, if you want to continue this, you're just embarrassing yourself.
Okay.
I'm happy to see you come down to this level. Now I know where the Tom Hartman show really is. It's in the gutter.
It's satire, Jerry.
Oh, it's satire. Well, okay, well, fine.
It's satire.
Ha, 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 ha,
yeah.
Ha, ha.
Well, I'm
loving it. Continue, Tom.
Okay.
If you want to continue, go right ahead.
You know, your comment that ragheads are boy bumpers as clearly as they're woman haters, this was satire, right?
Same category as the others. It was a Free Republic comment. Yep. There's a whole list of them. You can read them all if you like.
No, I see no need to. I think that, you know, they're out there. But my point,
they didn't reflect my views at the time. They don't reflect my views now.
Yeah.
I've rejected them. I've apologized for them.
Right. John O'Neill, who, according to the book, co-authored the book Unfit for Command with you.
Correct.
Later said that you were simply an editor on the book. How has that been resolved? He's asserted that you're actually not an author or not the author of that book and just played a small role in it. Are you asserting that you actually co-authored it?
I co-authored the book. If you have any questions about John's opinion, you'll have to refer them to John. I'm not the authority over what John says or believes.
How do you, just, you know, to set aside the satire for a second, because we just have a minute.
Oh, you're going to do that now?
Jerry Corsi, The Obama Nation book.
You recovered mentally. Good. I'm glad you recovered mentally.
I'm getting there. What in this book do you think actually might stick against Obama? Where's the danger for him?
Well, I think a lot of it has stuck and is continuing to stick. A lot of this story on the abortion case with Jill Stanek, the nurse, on the infant who survived the late-term forced labor.
So this, these charges that he's in favor of infanticide somehow.
Case on...
Certainly, Sean Hannity has done 4 days in a row on that now.
Yes, and there's now tapes and other materials out there. Second case, another one that's just recently been established, and that is Frank Marshall Davis, the communist poet and journalist who was in Hawaii as Obama's mentor. That's now been established after the book. In fact, today this week, the Telegraph in London's written two additional stories on that.
Are you going to do anything on John McCain? I know that you're not going to vote for him either.
John McCain. I think I wrote about Obama because I think he's by far the most dangerous candidate, the most far left, and I oppose the left, which is what I guess is why the left hates me so much.
Okay, last question here, and then we've got to go. Is it true that James Carville is upset with you that apparently the only way you could get Mary Matlin to edit your book was to have sex with her?
Well, you'll have to refer that question to James Carville. I don't know him, and I quite frankly, Tom, would not be so ill-graced to ask the question, but it doesn't seem to bother you.
Okay. Jerome Corsi, his new book, his old book, Unfit for Command, his new book, The Obama Nation. You can read about it over at worldnetdaily.com. Jerome, thanks for dropping by. I see he's not. He's gone now. 17 minutes past the hour. It's Anything Goes Friday, 866-303-2270, our telephone number. I guess that last one was a little over the top. Sort of like boy bunk. Stick around. Give us a shout. We'll be right back.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman Program at HartmanRadio.com.
There is no suspense or mystery. The White House rewrites our history now. Heaven knows that anything goes. CEOs with shady practices offshore evade their taxes, so no one knows that anything goes. What's wrong today is now right, they say, for the rich to play while the rest must pay. It's the Enron way of old Kitty Lay and his paid for gigolos. And so George Bush, who was selected, though he was not elected, has caused our woes. Yeah, anything goes.
23 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program. And just, on the record, I guess, many of these... Swift boat comment. I don't know what questions that we had for Dr. Corsi. Maybe it was satire. I don't know. Some people are saying these things, and so it is important, is it not, to raise these rumors so that they can be discussed? I mean, isn't that what Jerome Corsi built a career doing? But maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe I went over the line. I'm not sure. Catherine in Los Angeles, what do you think? Hey, Catherine.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Listen, I was just amazed how he can dish it out, but he can't take it.
Well, I guess. I mean, I actually thought he handled it with good grace. In 6 years of doing this radio show, that's only the second time a conservative has hung up on me. The time before that was Dick Morris. And he was promoting his Hillary Condi book, and
yeah.
I had him on, and Dick Morris kept talking about Hillary's private life and her personal life and her personality, and I said, Dick, let's keep this to the issues, and he'd go back to, but, you can't trust her, she's a pathological liar, and I'd said, you don't know that, I don't know that, we're not psychiatrists, let's keep this to the issues, and after the third time that Dick Morris went back to basically slandering Hillary Clinton, I said, Dick, if you're going to keep talking about personal stuff, I'm going to raise the issue of prostitutes, and he immediately hung up on me.
Oh my goodness.
Because Dick Morris got fired from the Clinton administration, because
right.
He got busted
exactly.
For being with a prostitute.
I remember. I've talked to you about this before. I mean, he has complete freedom of speech, as do we all.
Yeah.
But he will have to answer for those words. And if there are Christians listening to you, or if you happen to be talking to Rick Warren in the next couple of days, I think you need to remind them that there's an eighth commandment. And there's also Matthew 12, for every idle word a man speaketh, he will render an account. And my thing is, I haven't been able to get myself on YouTube yet, but I'm going to get on there with something entitled "May the Measure with Which You Measure Be Measured Back to You."
Yeah, well,
because I am so tired of the public discourse of this country being wrecked with these slanderers and these, you know, these ego trips. I cannot stand it.
Catherine, thank you. I share your sentiments, and I set that segment up as to be humorous. I mean, I thought it would be satirical. I thought it would be funny to drop on Dr. Corsi the same kinds of basically scurrilous lies that he had dropped on John Kerry and Barack Obama. Michael, you disagree with me.
Yeah, I know that I'm going to get – everyone's going to call you and agree with what you – had to say with this Corsi, but I find that it was very off color for you at the last question. I don't know if you were, there was a tongue in cheek thing about Mary Matlin about.
Yeah, that was over the top. I should not. I would like to apologize to Mary Matlin and James Carville for that one. That was, you're right. That was tacky. And in fact, I almost didn't ask it, and I should have let my better judgment prevail. I went over the top. Michael, I agree with you. Thank you very much. Darren in Detroit. Darren, what's up?
Greetings from the Motor City.
Thank you. We have about a half a minute, by the way. I'm sorry.
Okay, I'll be real quick. I just want to give a warning to everyone to stay clear of Kwame Kilpatrick if he shows up at the convention, because that man's just cancer. He's destroyed the city, and...
Yeah, well, he's got his own problems, you know. He's apparently going to have a real awful time. I mean, you know, the whole thing with the instant messages and the affair, and now this is tragedy. I mean, and frankly, you see tragedy on both sides. You know, we had Bob Nahum the other day, and you saw tragedy there. I think that, you know, Randy Cunningham, you know, humans are fallible, and when people fall, particularly when they fall hard and high and they create their own fall, which is just, you know, so common, frankly. It's so human. It's tragic. I really think it is. 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. Anything Goes Friday, 866-303-2270.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Call him now at 866-303-2270.
The hour.
Baby, take off your coat.
Oh, not again.
Real slow.
Here we have in Beaumont, Texas, a police officer, Mr. Brenner, saying that if he contracted a sexually transmitted disease, it's the city's responsibility.
Baby, take off your dress.
Because in that prostitution bust, he was on the job. He says, if you're asking if I had an orgasm, yes, but it was a job, sir. I didn't have pleasure doing this. I was paid to do it. I have very high morals, but they are being attacked because of something I did for the city, says the police officer. Yeah.
Wall over there.
Yeah. Oh, my. 866-303-2270. Our telephone number. And Richard in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Richard, what's up?
Well, Tom, I wanted to offer an entry into the speculation sweepstakes. I talked to you guys on KPOJ earlier, and I thought maybe a national audience might find it worth pondering. You know, you've been calling for some better political theater by the Democrats, and it seems to me it would be wonderful political theater if the best basketball player ever to be nominated to run for president by a major party made his announcement maybe during that halftime or just after the American semifinal game, which is on TV as we speak, on you know, American TV.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of, it would give them a huge audience. It would show Obama as being not some effete windsail surfing guy, but a basketball playing guy. And I just think it would be a very smart move. It would then guarantee it being seen by everybody who watches, because I'm sure they'd at least have a scroll. And
yeah, it'd be very.
That's my entry into the speculation.
Switch. Okay, we got it. Thank you, Richard. It's interesting. You know, it'd be interesting timing. I mean, in retrospect, I think this thing is going to be as fascinating as it is prospectively. You know, watching it in advance. Rob in Long Island. Hey, Rob, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Great.
I wanted to ask you a question because as I've mentioned before, I listen to a lot of conservative radio to kind of counterbalance and determine what arguments and talking points are going to be brought up as I'm going through this presidential race. And it seems like a lot of these conservative talk show hosts are banging on this drum about Obama's birth certificate being a forgery. And I'd like you to speak to that because I everything that I'm finding, you know, when I try to Google this, everything I'm finding is all right-wing websites and right-wing conversations, and there's not really – I'm not seeing anything that seems like facts, you know, being brought up to it, just opinions.
Well, you might want to try, you know, one of the debunking sites. You know, Obama has one on his site, and John Kerry has one up on his site, these debunking sites. And then, of course, there's Snopes.com. But, you know, here's the bottom line, Robin. It is that the Republicans' agenda is to consolidate wealth and power in a way that is fundamentally anti-democratic, to defend that wealth and power with the force of a police state, which is why George Bush is moving us in that direction so rapidly, and to strip from the American people the ability to push back against their own government in any meaningful way. You know, for example, torture. One of the reasons why Bush would brag about torturing and wiretapping in the United States is not that he wants people to think, oh, you know, he's making us safe. It's to scare people. It's to say to potential protesters, to potential political candidates even, you know, that he has the power to watch us. He has the power to listen in on us. He has the power to destroy us. The prosecution of Don Siegelman, arguably the prosecution of Bob Ney, the prosecution of Paul Miner. What you see in police states is that it's not a lot of people. You know, Pinochet didn't kill millions of people. He just killed a couple of thousand. That's all he had to do. He only tortured a few thousand people as well. And then let them go back home and tell the story. Or if the media picks it up, even better. So it's all about scaring the hell out of people and promoting their agenda. The problem is that in an election, that doesn't fly. So in an election, they've got to change the conversation from what they're really up to and what they're really doing to something that is relatively meaningless and that is going to cause the Democrats to have to waste precious time talking about that, you know, late-term infanticide, for example. Barack Obama is certainly not a supporter of infanticide, never has been. And the vote that all the conservatives are pointing at in the Illinois legislature is being completely mischaracterized. But the reason that they're doing it, the reason they try to come up with these issues and the you know, was he, you know, is his birth certificate, you know, or John McCain was born in Panama for that matter. I mean, but the reason why they do this is because at all costs they have to avoid a discussion of the real issues. That's the bottom line. That's absolutely what it's all about. And so anyhow, that's what they're doing. Phil and Tempe, you want to yell at me about taking on Jerome Corsi?
Well, no, I can understand you wanting to speak your end of it because he does make a lot of.
Well, it's not my end. I was trying to make a funny segment.
I get that.
He says that the Pope's all in favor of boy bumping as long as it doesn't get reported by the liberal media that he's just doing satire. And I've, you know, I met John Paul II. I have a rosary that he handed to me. We talked for a few minutes. I have tremendous respect for Pope John Paul II. And but, you know, if it's satire, it's satire. And I thought
right.
I'd try some satire.
My point is that on a serious issue, this Internet thing, you know, you guys on the left do a lot of protecting for Scott Ritter, who actually was arrested and
And let's talk about Larry Craig, and let's talk about, you know, the guy down in Florida, and let's talk about David Vitter, who got busted with a hooker. I mean, actually breaking the law, United States Senator actually breaking the law. And what did the Republicans do when he came back into the Senate? They gave him a standing ovation. I mean, come on, there are humans who have fallen or failed on all sides, and I would be the first to acknowledge that, and you know, none of us are without sin. And it's so, I Jerry, I think Jerry Corsi got it that I was being facetious, which, for, you know, tragically is more than I can say for many of the conservative hosts who have had on, you know, serious discussions of some of his more, shall we say, satirical comments. Mark in Portland. Hey, Mark.
Hi, I thought an interesting title for Jerome Kersey's next book might be No Comment.
No Comment?
He filled it all white pages or something.
Yeah,
the table of contents would have the leftist smears, and he wouldn't address any of them or what have you. But you're right, it gets down to the politics of personal destruction, which is a complete distraction away from the real issues that really matter to people. The rich are getting much richer, and the poor are getting a lot poorer.
Yeah, it is.
That's the bottom line. I mean, that's what it really comes down to. And with all the distractions, I mean, people, if they're undecided, you better get decided very quickly or else this is going to get a lot worse.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said, Mark. Thank you. Ashley in Santa Fe, New Mexico, listening on KTRC. Hey, Ashley.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
First-time caller, long-time listener, and lover of all your books
and
your show, and you can do no wrong in my mind.
Uh-oh.
I'm calling because I have a beef about the interview with the evangelical interviewer the other night. I can't remember his name.
Rick Warren.
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking
and
about?
Interviewing McCain and Obama and bringing up the topic once again, the A word, abortion.
Right.
Why are they even discussing it? Why are they twisting it up? And again, it's all.
Well, they're discussing it because it's important to Rick Warren's base. What I thought was interesting was that Rick Warren chose the frame. And, you know, he said, since Roe v. Wade, there have been 40 million babies killed, or words to that effect. Isn't that, and that's a Holocaust. And, you know, what's your position on this? I'm badly paraphrasing, but he used the word babies. And, you know, were I Barack Obama, I would have said, if you're defining a baby as anything post, you know, sexual intercourse or post implantation, then before Roe v. Wade, there was another 40 million killed. You know, abortion didn't just begin with Roe v. Wade, number one.
Yeah.
And number two, we need to have a conversation in this country about when a zygote becomes a fetus, becomes a baby. You know, at what point is abortion going to be legal or illegal? And frankly, instead of having that conversation, we're now starting to have conversations about whether we should even have birth control. I mean,
right. Here is my suggestion. I hope a lot of people are listening. Every 12-year-old boy in the country gets a vasectomy. It cuts out abortion. It cuts out unwanted pregnancy, and it throws it back on the men.
Yeah. Well, this is a variation on my comment that men should not be entitled to have public opinions or to vote on any issue that has to do with abortion. And,
amen.
You know, and that if men got pregnant instead of women, abortion would be a sacrament.
Amen. Well, the vasectomy can be reversed when they turn 25.
Yeah, there you go. Okay.
Interesting. It stays on birth control. It cuts down on pharmaceutical cartel. It cuts down on unwanted pregnancies. Single mom trying to raise babies young.
Yeah, hey, why do it at 12? Why not make it as, you know, a lot of kids in America, well, never mind. I'm not going to. Ashley, thanks a lot for the call. It's, well, okay, a lot of kids in America are circumcised, so why not just make it part of the circumcision? You know, the vasectomy instantly at birth. I don't know. 45 minutes past the hour.
An historic time for America. Live, on-site coverage of the Democratic National Convention on Air America and AirAmerica.com. Our time is now.
the Tom Hartman Radio Program, defending America against the weapons of mass deception. Aaron Soto Carlin is with us, a scholar, entrepreneur, advocate at Johns Hopkins University, bpru.org/cancer, the website. And we're going to get back to your calls in just a minute, but I thought this was just great, some brilliant work, and also an opportunity out there. I'll let Aaron tell you about it. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot, Tom. It's great to be here.
You are doing research on cancer that involves psychedelics. Do I have that right?
Yes, exactly.
Tell us about it.
All right. The Behavioral Pharmacology Research Unit at the Bayview campus of Johns Hopkins Medicine is doing a study that is looking into the effectiveness of psilocybin, which is the active compound in magic mushrooms, as a treatment for depression and anxiety that patients are experiencing associated with a cancer diagnosis.
Mm-hmm. And you're looking for volunteers for this study?
Exactly, yes. The study normally gets volunteers from doctors at Johns Hopkins, and a lot of the oncologists are a little bit wary of the idea of psychedelics as a treatment tool due to a lot of the history in America with Timothy Leary and some of the other people who popularized psychedelics back in the 60s more for recreational use.
Yeah, although Leary did some brilliant research. I mean, and his first two books, with the titles of which, Politics of Ecstasy and I forget the other one, but they were fascinating. I mean, you know, and some of the papers that he and Richard Alpert, now known as Ram Dass, published were, you know, particularly the work on alcoholism that actually was done before Leary even, you know, LSD and alcoholism. And so in any case, if somebody has a cancer diagnosis and they're interested in participating in your study at Johns Hopkins University, how do they get in touch with you? How do they follow up on that?
The best way would be to go to that website that you mentioned, bpru.org/cancer, I believe, and talk with Mary Cosimano, who is the volunteer coordinator for the study.
Okay, we'll get that up on our website, too, at tomhartman.com. We'll just put it in today's show notes. What does BPRU stand for?
Behavioral Pharmacology Research Unit.
I see. Okay, bpru.org. And any early results, or is way too early to talk about what you're, you know, I realize in good research you don't go in necessarily with expectation. Well, I suppose you have some expectation, but without assumptions. But anything you want to pontificate about here?
Yeah, definitely. There's a couple things. The reason that psilocybin was chosen as a therapeutic agent was that at UCLA in the past 5 years, a study was done with almost exactly the same research design. This is, in a way, a follow-up study to further cement the effectiveness of what is called psychedelic therapy. And basically, what happens is that the patients come in and sit down on a couch and ingest the substance and listen to classical music with some eye shades and a clinical psychologist and social worker for 6 hours and are basically guided through the process in a way that's pretty similar to traditional healing processes in indigenous cultures all around the world.
Mm-hmm. And who also use these plant-based substances all around the world.
Exactly. And the study in UCLA found very significant effects. There were a number of testimonials that are linked on the website of people with cancer diagnosis fairly close to their death who ended up really letting go of all the fear and anxiety that really paralyzed them during those last, say, 6 months, a year of their life and ended up living that last portion of their life to their fullest.
Right. It just makes perfect sense. I would love to see this research be successful. Aaron Soto Carlin, bpru.org/cancer is the website for this research at Johns Hopkins University. Aaron, good luck.
Thank you so much, Tom.
And thanks for coming on the program today and sharing this with us.
Great.
Good talking with you. 55 minutes past the hour. Robin in Olympia, Washington. Hey, Robin, what's on your mind today?
go Hartman, go Hartman. It was nice to see that guy get a little taste of the Jerry Springer Show.
Yeah.
As he's been doing. Tom, the main thing that I called about was the same thing that I talked to you about this morning, this thing that the Attorney General is doing. He's given the FBI guidelines for looking into yours and mine or anybody else's
right.
history and everything, and basically data mining us with no suspicion.
Right.
They don't even need to suspect us. It's time to call our senators, especially these four, Kennedy, Feingold, Durbin, and I think the other one's Whitehouse. The four of them, according to the New York Times, the article that they ran yesterday, wrote him a letter saying that they were disconcerted by this.
Yeah.
Disconcerted?
They should be impeaching Mukasey over this, Robin. They should be impeaching Mukasey over this. The Fourth Amendment says explicitly, the right of the people, that's you and me, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and specifically describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized.
And
period. End of sentence.
The twist in the wind for it.
Yeah, Mukasey should be impeached. I mean, you want to start an impeachment proceeding. This is where to start, is with Mukasey and say, this is wrong. This will not stand. And it's really about the issue. It's about he's not upholding his oath of office, which is to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. In fact, he's doing the exact opposite. He is tearing apart the Constitution of the United States, making a mockery of the Constitution of the United States. Anything Goes Friday. Your calls coming up next. 866-303-2270. TomHartman.com. Drop into our live chat room. 57 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Listening to Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to Anything Goes Friday. Tom Hartman here with you, fighting for the common man, the common woman, and the common good. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Still no word. I'm frankly surprised. I was convinced that Barack Obama was going to announce his vice presidential candidate yesterday. Although it makes perfect sense that as long as this McCain can't remember how many houses he's got. Oh, it's seven houses worth $13 million? No, maybe it's 10 houses now. The count seems to be 10 houses and seven properties. The house that he's in, it's in Sedona right now, where he's vacationing. Oh, vacationing? Oh, my goodness. Has a guest house. So there's two houses actually on that property. But in any case, McCain can't remember how many houses he and Cindy have. And the question was, how many do you and your wife have, not how many do you have? Because apparently he has a prenuptial. If he is elected president, he would be our first president with a prenup. And all of these properties are in his wife's name, because she's the one with the big bucks. He's the one who abandoned his first wife after she was disfigured in a car accident and hooked up and, in fact, got a marriage license while he was still married to his first wife, and then hooked up with the richest woman in Arizona, apparently, and fairly pretty too, and almost 20 years his junior. So is any of that going to haunt John McCain, or is that just personality junk? Is that just swift boating junk? Have I been spending too much time with Jerry Corsi? I don't know. Maybe. 866-303-2270, your telephone number. Phil in Santa Cruz, California. Hey, Phil, what's on your mind?
Yeah, good morning, Tom. Nice work with Jerome Kersey.
I feel real ambivalent about it, frankly, Phil. I agree with the one caller that my last question, I should never have dragged, Carville and Matlin into it. It was just way over the top.
Well,
but,
according to CNN, MSNBC, and the New York Daily News, there's another prominent Republican that was involved in all of that, you know, soliciting minors for sex, you know, Scott Ritter.
Yeah.
So you're right on with your, with, you know, with your...
Yeah, you're the second person to call and invoke Scott Ritter's name. It's, I am guessing that the, you know, the Republican Party sent out a note saying, okay, call a Hartman show right now and be sure to, you know, give me a break. Come on. It's, here I am trying to be, you know, honest about my own ambivalence about this, and you guys are trying to turn it into talking points on the other side. Give me a break. Jim and Van Nuys. Hey, Jim.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but those of us on the left just need to get out of this 60s mode
mm-hmm.
and just start kicking. Because I tell people flat out that if they vote for McCain, they're racist. Because if McCain gets in, our credibility will be forever destroyed. Because we stated in 1776, all men are equal. And since my patriotism's been questioned, I have no problem telling or asking an Iraq vet where the weapons were and what it's like to kill civilians. And then we've got to question the patriotism of conservatives who buy SUVs, especially with foreign nameplates. And I found they can't hold up to the scrutiny. And the other thing is with that woman who said that boys should be forced to have vasectomies. We know that vasectomies, once they're reversed, the guy can't. It doesn't work the same. I say we license parenthood, call it the Britney Spears law. And no, seriously, Washington should license parenthood.
Yeah.
And there will be no abortions. And people who have kids will actually want them. So once again, you know, girls, women are the ones who want the babies. So, you know, hey, don't blame us.
Okay, Jim, thanks a lot. I disagree to a certain extent that we should become the Republicans. I really don't think we should. I think that one of the virtues of the Democratic Party and progressives and the Green Party, for that matter, as well, is that they are that we are forward looking, that we have a clear vision of America, of the future, that we can and that we can also learn from the past. We can look back over the 230-year history of this country, and we can see the times when this country was ruled by progressives, was governed by progressives, and it helped bring about a broad and strong middle class. And we can see the times when the country was run by conservatives and it crashed repeatedly from the Republican Great Depression of the 1930s to the Reagan Depression that's happening right now. And it's just, yeah, it's there. I mean, you can see it. So anyhow, Harvey in Berkeley. Hey, Harvey.
Hi, Tom. As usual, great show. And I'd like to lift this up a little bit. And Tom, I have an idea that I think will help speed up the implementation of a solar electric infrastructure, especially
mm-hmm.
here in California.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is to lease companies could lease rooftop space from buildings with large rooftops, like commercial, governmental, or educational buildings, and I call the and cover them with solar electric rooftop with roof panels, and I call the rooftop the last frontier of real estate, and it usually costs the building's owners many thousands of dollars. Due to ultraviolet radiation in rooftop replacement
yeah.
or repairment.
You know, Harvey, that's actually being done here in Oregon.
The
state is offering, and I don't know if we're unique in this. I don't think so, but the state is offering some sort of a tax credit or rebate or whatever. And plus, there's federal money, or at least there used to be. I'm assuming this is still in place. We our community, we have 34 houses in our little houseboat community, and they came down and pitched this to us that they could do it on the roofs of all the houses and along the walkway and, you know, and over the parking lot. But the way it works is but it's mostly corporations that do it, that they get, some kind of a tax credit of sorts that makes it worthwhile. Plus, you know, they get to sell the electricity back. That makes it worthwhile to put the things up, and there's a company here in town, a couple of companies actually, I think, that are out there soliciting, you know, buying rooftops, basically, you know, looking for rooftop space. So yeah, I think it's a great idea, Harvey, and I tip my hat to you for coming up with it, and needs to be propagated. Gary in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, listening on Wins. Hey, Gary, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to tell you how much I enjoyed your interview with Jerome Corsi. And I actually didn't find anything you said to him offensive. And sometimes it's as simple as, you know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
Yeah, well, that was our philosophy in going into it. And I think if I had stopped short of the very last question, it would have been just fine. But, Gary, thank you very much for your comments. I appreciate it. Charles in Georgetown, Kentucky. Hey, Charles. Charles? Okay, Devron in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Devron. Either two callers in a row. That's okay. It may just be a coincidence. Okay, let's.
Hello.
Oh, whoop! There we go. Devron, is that you?
Yeah, that's me.
You're on the air.
Thanks, Tom. The whole issue I'm calling about is McCain's service not being able to be talked about or referenced. Personally, if I was going to have somebody who was, I'd want somebody who didn't start talking and turn it in on his homeboys.
Yeah.
Or, you know.
Well, I'll tell you, I've been a little schizophrenic about this. I mean, last Friday, after we had a caller from the Vietnam Veterans Against John McCain.com website.
Yeah.
And, I'd been over there before, actually, and I'd listened to some of their videos, watched some of their videos, and read some of their material, and thought, you know, some of this stuff is pretty serious indictments, and of John McCain's war record, as it were.
Yeah.
But then I dug into it a little further, and I found that a lot of the same folks were the folks who were the far right, the fringe right, in the MIA Vietnam thing for years and years that John McCain was pushing back on.
Yeah.
And that this is sort of revenge for that for some of them.
Well,
and I realized that I was dropping myself in the middle of a battle between the far right and the right, and it's like, you know, just, ooh, creepy.
Yeah. Well, see, no, the thing I'm saying is that, you know, I don't question what he did or his valor. I'm just saying that, you know, there's people that didn't squeal or there's people that didn't, you know, have that trouble. And
yeah,
it's
but
okay.
You,
it's also,
you know,
okay.
Devron, neither you nor I can condemn him for making those videos. I mean, we can't. At least I can't speak for you, but I can't imagine what
no.
it would be like to be tortured.
No, you're right. We can't condemn him. But in the same token, if he's going to bring up his service, then we need to be able to discuss it. Otherwise, then it should be off the table. That's all I want to say. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. And for me, it's just by and large off the table because I don't have a handle to discuss it. At this moment, I just don't think, frankly, it should be an issue. Just like, you know, I mean, let's just acknowledge that, you know, the guy was in the military and he did his best. It might not have been the very best that could be done, but he did his best, presumably. And you know, it's in the past. I mean, you think of what happened to John Kerry. Well, anyway, I don't think that we should be refighting those battles. Scott in Falls River, Massachusetts, listening to WHMP. Hey, Scott, hang on just a second here. I'm sorry, I missed the time cue. And we got to take a break. 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, Viagra for your brain. I know it doesn't lead to stiff thinking, but it is stimulating. We'll be right back. 866-303-2270. TomHartman.com if you want to drop into our live chat room.
The Tom Hartman Program. Visit us on the web at HartmanRadio.com.
Any topic you want, 21 minutes past the hour. And by the way, just a heads up, our conservative alert for the day, the crazy American Family Association has announced a boycott against Hallmark. Why? Because Hallmark is offering greeting cards. They're offering, you know, wedding cards for same-sex marriages. Congratulations, Hallmark! I will now buy more Hallmark cards. But the old cons over at the AFA, they say, no, this is not. This is stop promoting a lifestyle. It's unhealthy. It's also illegal in 48 states. It's not that it's illegal. It's that it's not yet legal. So, anyway. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And let me get back to my screen here. Scott in Falls River, Massachusetts. Hey, Scott, what's up?
Tom,
Yes, sir.
Okay, a few points. Run through them real quick. I actually called your screen. I'll go with that first. Drilling and refineries. I'm a pipe welder. I just was reading an article in the shop where I was doing some welding today, and we're short 200,000 welders in this country, according to that article. So how do they plan on building those refineries and building those oil drilling devices?
That's a good question. We've outsourced so much blue-collar work in this country that people are not going into, you know, people aren't going the shop and become like a machinist or a skilled, you know, the skilled trades. It's just not happening anymore.
Yeah, well, welding is kind of nasty. I came home pretty filthy, and there's a lot of smoke and carcinogens around. It's a lot easier to talk somebody into going into computers than it is to talk them into going into welding.
Right, which is another reason why welders should be well-paid. I mean, you know, we should.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that idea.
No, I'm serious. I grew up in a machine shop, in a tool and die shop. My dad worked in metal machining company, a tool and die shop, and before that in a drop forge shop. And, you know, those guys got mighty dirty, and in fact, you know, he died because they were handling asbestos.
Right. I heard you talking about that the other day.
But the bottom line is that they had a good salary. They got a good wage. They got a good living wage. You know, the dad was able to buy a house. When he died, it was fully paid off. He bought a car every 4 years, a brand new car. I mean, they were raised four boys. I mean, one salary. And, those days, you know, Ronald Reagan saw to it that was never going to happen again in America, at least until we get another FDR as president. And anyway, I'm digressing. Scott, you had another point.
Okay. I agree that, with the parenting license, that I'm sure that I should have probably been licensed at 20 years old when I had my kids. I made a note, so I'm reading it. I say you can't license parenthood and still maintain enough poverty to man the armed forces.
Yeah.
And
which brings up this brilliant quote from Thomas Jefferson. He said, I hope we shall never see a day in America where we have to pay, where our young men are willing to be shot at for a sixpence.
One more point. Well, two more points, actually, and one is kind of amusing. The Cunningham thing, if he went to the bank laughing as hard as he was crying when he was going to jail, I think everything worked out even, and there's no real tragedy there.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, I have seen baby pigeons. I've heard you mention this over the years. Is that still significant to you?
Yeah, they're not pigeons, Scott.
They're pigeons.
Doves that have been cleverly painted.
I work in power plants, and I'll tell you all about it. I work in power plants. I'm a pipe welder. I work in a coal yard, and I've seen them poke through their eggs.
They are baby doves that have been put there by the aliens just to fool you, so
oh,
you
no.
call this program.
Well, what about all those other pigeons that are flying all over the place?
They're robots.
Oh, okay.
They're spying on us, Scott. I'm telling you, they're spying on us. They're spying on you. See, they've got you doing their dirty work.
Well, I'm not over there now.
Okay.
I'm going to another place where it's a little bit cleaner. But anyway,
Scott, thanks a lot for the call.
All right, take it easy, man.
I appreciate you too. Tim in South Bend, Indiana. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Tom. I want to thank you very much for having Vincent Bugliosi on.
Yeah, except he doesn't pronounce the G.
And if you
say it that way, he gets real offended. So it's Bugliosi. He's a great guy. Did you notice that his book is number 10 on the New York Times bestseller list, even though there is a media blackout on it? None of the corporate media will touch Vincent Bugliosi's new book, The Prosecution for Murder of George W. Bush, and it's number 10 on the New York Times bestseller list.
Well, it's fantastic it's number 10, but you know, I did have trouble finding it when I went to Barnes & Noble.
It turns
out it was on the lower shelf, hidden. There were only like four copies.
Jeez.
And yet, Obamanation had like, there was at least four or five displays of just tons of books propped up on the stands and everything. So needless to say, I took the other three books, because I bought one for myself, and put them on top of one of the abominations and put it on top of a stand, you know, so people could see it. But you should have seen the look on the girl's face, or the lady, I should say, that sold me the book.
Yeah.
She gave me one of these glances like there was something wrong with me.
Yeah.
I'll
tell you, you know, having as the author of 20 books and one was a New York Times bestseller, I'll tell you, the way that this happens is no accident. For a certain price, and I don't know what it is now. The last time that I was involved in a promotion like this was, I think, 4 years ago. I had a book come out where a publisher did a nationwide promotion with one of the big book chains. And it was something like $4,000 a week to have your book in the front window of the store or $5,000 a week to have it on the displays in the front, you know, and they charge the publishers for this. All of that, whenever you see displays of books, large displays of books in the big chain bookstores, it has been paid for, or in the airport bookstores. It's paid for by the publishers. So the publishers drive books. They decide which books that they're going to drive to become bestsellers and which ones they're not. And there's a whole bunch of things that go, you know, factors that go into it. But in particular, if you've got a lot of right-wing organizations that are going to promote the hell out of the book, and maybe they're even the ones paying the bookstores. I don't know. I mean, the bookstores, they don't care who gives them the money, as far as I know. 27 minutes past the hour.
This is Tom Hartman. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. Tom, I'm here with you 34 minutes past the hour. Chris in Monterey, California, listening to KRXA. Hey, Chris, what's up?
This Chris? Is Charles at Monterey.
Oh, Charles, I'm sorry.
It's yes. An honor to be on your show, Tom. It's an honor to be on any show that Senator Bernie Sanders is on. I say Hallmark, yes. Life begins when consciousness dawns, so the fertility clinics are not killing anyone when they dump out all those thousands of things. I got a few negative sparks from your Corsi interview on both sides, but I'd like to talk about, if you have any questions about 911, if you didn't like illegal wars, if you don't like loss of rights and privacy, the incompetence and wrongheadedness of government agencies, the least we could do is to have hope and vote Obama. We're likely, most likely under him to get the massive democratic reforms we need to make third party votes other than spoilers. And I'd like to conclude with, I think we have a new energy for peace as E equals MC squared was for war that will put legs on a new world of change. This is from the McClatchy newspapers 2 days ago at offshore windmills, the new energy frontier.
Yeah, well, it's what they're doing in Denmark. It's what they're doing in Denmark.
Norway, Denmark, Britain, and another one already are under development. They're able to, our own energy department in the U.S. estimates that with these far offshore windmills that you don't even see, we can produce an amount of electric energy equal to all of our current energy being produced, and even now at a price compatible.
Yep.
And the last thing I'll say of the electrical department, MIT last month discovered solar cells increased their electrical output 10 to 40 times. Yep. So, yes, we can.
Yeah, there you go. Yes, well said, Charles. Thank you very much. Yes, we can. And we really do need to have the you know, this discussion in America. It needs to be moving forward. Ron in Bainbridge Island, Washington. Hey, Ron.
Yeah, right. Tom, corporations are persons, and Corporation A owns Corporation B, C, and D. Aren't Corporations B, C, and D slaves?
Yes.
And isn't Corporation A a slaver? And don't we have a 14th Amendment to the Constitution?
Yeah, I raised that question in my book, Unequal Protection, as one of many questions that confront corporate personhood head on. And in fact, Henry Dolmus, the guy who originally argued that case in 1886, the lawyer who just a brilliant lawyer who argued, he was the guy who saved the Redwoods in California, by the way, but this is in the 1880s, 1886, Santa Clara County versus Southern Pacific Railroad. And he argued the ridiculousness, the absurdity of personhood for corporations. And the court agreed with him. It was the clerk of the court who wrote a headnote that contradicted the actual ruling that has been quoted all these years. And the clerk of the court was actually the former president of the New York and Newburgh Railroad. He was a railroad man himself. He was a guy on the inside. And he was also the former, the son of the former governor of Massachusetts. But it was an inside job, as they say. And it's been going on ever since, and people need to know about it. I've written two books that, one entire book on this, Unequal Protection. And my book, We the People, has several chapters that go into some depth on it. And actually, that's one of my very favorite books, if I can engage in a little bit of promotion. John in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Hey, John, what's up?
Howdy. I want to talk about abortion.
Mm-hmm.
I think this debate about when a person becomes a human being is silly. It's beside the point.
Why?
I think a woman should have the right to end the baby's life before or after it's born.
Hey, well, I'm just going to flat out disagree with you on that, John. I mean,
I think most people would.
Yeah, I think most people would too. At the very least, I mean, the way law is right now is that for all practical purposes in most states, if a fetus is viable, if it can live outside its mother's womb, then it's considered a baby and a human being and deserves to be protected. And I think that that's a reasonable position, frankly. So, anyhow, let's see here, Sheila and Eugene. Hey, Sheila, what's up?
Well, we talk about cars and fuel, and let's find another way to run a car. What happened to the electric car in the 80s? The technology is there. They have everything they need to build this car, but they're talking about all these...
A, we didn't have the infrastructure. B, you had the oil industry and interlocking boards with the automobile industries and the...
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That's my whole point. Who killed it? I believe it was not only, we talk about the oil, but the service departments, is all the car dealerships, that's their biggest moneymaker.
Yeah.
And if the electric car comes back, but isn't this criminal that they're talking about and putting off, and it'll be how many years before they have an electric
car? Well, actually, GM is busting their butts on this thing, Sheila. They're running full-page ads in like the Financial Times and things talking about how they're trying to reinvent the car. I believe they really are. And I don't say that just because they're sponsoring the show. I think that, in part, I think that all of the car makers are looking very, very seriously at this. This is the new frontier.
That's
the electric cars, the hybrid cars, the gas. Yesterday there was a brand new fuel cell that was developed, that was announced, that can convert ethanol or any basic, carbon-based high fraction alcohols into hydrogen very quickly.
Yeah, Tom, the other thing, though, is that, why don't, I kind of lost my train of thought. Oh, why isn't it talked about by any of the news commentators? Nobody, you haven't mentioned that we already have it. It just maybe has to be updated. Nobody has mentioned it.
We've had the guy on who produced the movie Who Killed the Electric Car. I mean, it's been probably a year, but it's a great movie, and we've certainly discussed it. Sheila, I have to move along, but thank you very much for your call. It's good to hear from you, Ken, in East Brunswick, New Jersey. Hey, Ken, what's on your mind today?
Oh, hi, Tom. I'm a podcast subscriber, so I hope I'm not out of sync because
it's Anything Goes Friday, Ken.
Okay, thanks. You mentioned to a caller last week that you felt that the general population is suffering from a kind of post-traumatic stress disorder as a result of 9/11.
Yes.
I 9/11 is key. I think even Karl Rove could get off the hook if there were enough pressure put on the public. You have judges, citing 9/11 as a reason for, getting rid of habeas corpus, the specter of another 9/11. I'd just like to make the point that, sort of the point that you made on the anniversary of the infamous PDB, is that, the Bush administration had a lot of culpability. I don't think that gets enough attention. The 9/11 Commission said that it was just a failure of imagination. We have to ask ourselves, well, how much imagination would it have taken the president to cancel, the second longest vacation of any president in history? How much imagination would it have taken Cheney, after he reported himself to be in charge of a terrorism committee, to actually hold a meeting? How much imagination would it have taken Condoleezza Rice to imagine airplanes flying into buildings when she already knew about lots of stories about the possibility of airplanes flying into buildings. So my general point is I think it's just time to take on the Michael Reagans of the world and start letting people know that in reality, the emperor doesn't have any clothes, not even a mantle of national security.
And as often happens with shocks and traumas, and thank you, Ken, for that. As often happens with shocks and traumas, I think that the to the extent that we have post-traumatic stress disorder nationally, that there's some sort of national PTSD, I think it's wearing off. I think it's been 6 years, it's 7 years. People are getting over it. They're getting past 9/11. But that tape, that videotape, was replayed over and over and over again. And then, we had this national morbid media fascination with the horrors of 9/11. And then it got demagogued by our president, who could have used it as an opportunity to bring the world together and strengthen the police powers of the world in a way that actually would track down criminals like the criminals behind 9/11, whoever they may be, but instead decided to use it as an opportunity to basically, promote the Republican Party, and all the more the tragedy. Bob in Torrance. Hey, Bob. Bob, you're on the air.
In Torrance?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, hey, Tom. I appreciate what you did to Jerome Corsi. A little over the top, but I think it's about time liberals started doing that. But what I wanted to chat with you about is a more progressive tax policy, and I wanted to get your input on this. And basically what I'm talking about is that for every dollar you make over $1 million in ordinary income, your tax rate would go up 10%. So instead of paying 35% at the top that we have now, it'd be 45%. And then every dollar over $10 million, it'd be 55%. And then over $100 million, it'd be 65%. And you could do the same thing for capital gains. Every dollar over $1 million in capital gains, you pay 25%, and then it goes to 35%. And so you're not really taxing wealth, you're taxing excessive wealth. And you could not have this apply to corporations, so you could get rid of that double tax thing, but it would only be individuals and their income that would be taxed at that rate. I want to get your thoughts on that.
Well, this is the essence of the debate, Bob. There was a consensus in the United States in the 30s when the top income tax rate was raised to 91% on the first dollar you earn after $3 million in today's dollars. And it stayed that way. Kennedy lowered it to 70%, but it stayed that way until Reagan became president and dropped it down to the 20s. There was a consensus that we didn't want in the United States to have a landed gentry. We didn't want to have people who were wildly wealthy. Wealthy is fine. Upper middle class, fine. The rich is fine, but massively rich, so rich that you can create an empire that 20 generations later, you're going to control the country. No, we didn't want that, and that has changed. 45 minutes past the hour.
This is The Moment. Continuing live coverage from Denver of the Democratic National Convention on Air America and AirAmerica.com. Our time is now.
Thanks so much to Louise Hartman, to my producer, our executive producer, Sean Taylor, to Chris Rosen and Lauren Kirshner and Marcus Hellman at Air America New York, to Sue Nethercutt and the folks in our chat room, and Mike Toth, who does our audio archives on our website, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for listening to our program. Thank you. 866-303-2270. Brian in Beverly Hills. Hey, Brian, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I wanted to comment on the guy from Johns Hopkins about the psilocybin research?
Yeah, Aaron Carlin, Soto Carlin, yes.
Yes, and I was just wondering if you were familiar with Terrence McKenna.
I am very familiar with Terrence McKenna. I read True Hallucinations. I read two others of his books. The titles don't immediately come to mind. It's been a decade or more.
Yeah, Archaic Revival
tragically,
and Food of the Gods.
Pardon?
Archaic Revival and Food of the Gods were the other main books that he wrote.
Yes, and those are the other two that I read.
And he went as far as to say that, that psilocybin could actually be responsible for the origin of human culture and religion.
Yes, and I thought he made a very strong case for it, actually.
Absolutely.
And there is also a video, if you can find it, if you can track it down, of Terrence McKenna and one of the really famous physicists of the day, and I'm drawing a blank on his name, and one of the famous psychologists of the day. And I, you know, it's been years. I mean, it's been at least 10 years since I saw this thing.
Right.
And but it's the three of these guys having about an hour long conversation about the nature of reality.
Right.
And
Sheldrake?
Yeah, no, it wasn't. But Sheldrake has talked with McKenna. There are tapes out there. But no, this was not quite Einstein level, but you know, one of the, I think it was David Bohm. I'd have to go back and look, but I believe it was David Bohm was the physicist. But in any case, Terrence McKenna was a genius. I mean, just you know, such a tragic loss. He died of brain cancer.
Absolutely.
What, 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
Something. I saw many of his lectures.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was brilliant. And I think, you know, even, I mean, he was, you know, he covered world history and politics and everything. And I think he was so far ahead of his time.
Yep.
Even 20 years ago, you listen to what he was talking about, and it's everything that we're talking about now on talk radio.
I agree. And I encourage people to check out his work. Even though he's dead, most of his work is still in print. And,
absolutely.
And
there's
you can find
hundreds
a lot.
And hundreds of audio tapes of his lectures that are, every single one of them is just a new. You know, I mean, he's got a certain talking points, but every single thing is just this vast amount of knowledge about different subjects.
And yeah, absolutely agree, Brian. Brian, thank you very much for bringing that up and giving us all an opportunity. By the way, before I get back to your calls, I forgot to mention earlier, coming up next week on Monday, the Sea Change Ideas Forum, 2 to 3 p.m., I'll be debating Dennis Prager at the DNC, and the tickets are at seachange.com, seachange.com. Seachangecom.com. And then in the big tent at from 3 to 6, I'll be moderating one of the panels there. This one, the contest, Progressives versus Conservatives with Paul Krugman, Arianna Huffington, John Podesta, David Sirota, sponsored by Green Mountain Coffee Roasters. And then on Tuesday night in Denver, I'll be at Borders Books in Lone Tree, Colorado at the Park Meadows Mall. And let's see. And then the following Monday, September 1st, I'll be speaking at SEIU's Take Back Labor Day Festival in Minneapolis, along with a whole bunch of really great folks, and including Andy Stern, president of SEIU, and Change to Win chair Anna Berger. And on September 2nd, the AM 950, the Voice of Minnesota, invites you to a party for change. Bill Press, Stephanie Miller, Jim Ward, Chris Lavoie, Ed Schultz, me, John Elliott, and Bill Press and I will be doing book signings there. That's at 5:30, and that's at the Black Bear Crossing on the Lake in historic Como Lakeside Pavilion. That's September 2nd, Tuesday, a week from Tuesday, during the Republican National Convention. So a lot going on, a lot coming up. Stuart in Seattle. Hey, Stuart.
Yes. I'd like to defend John McCain on a statement that he made when he said something to the effect of, we have a strong economy, or we have a good economy. For we do have he does have a strong economy for his America. He was referring to his America, the Americans that have over $100 billion of assets, the Americans that are the most exploitive of the Americans that prey on the rest of us, which is part of why the rest of us often are losing our homes and struggling to make ends meet. So I'd like to encourage people never to listen to that term, the economy, without asking whose economy.
Right.
We can't frame an economic issue as just the economy. Got to say whose it is.
Yeah, there are multiple economies, absolutely, and very well said. Thank you. In fact, real income for the median male worker, this is from Robert Freeman's piece over at Common Dreams, real income for the median male worker is below what it was in 1973. Even after 7 years of growing GDP, we're below where we were in 2001. The ratio of debt to income for the average American has doubled over the past 30 years, from 65% to 135%. Some 77 million baby boomers stand on the threshold of retirement, half of them having no savings whatsoever. A full 40% of all wage earners have a net worth of zero. The price of oil has more than quintupled since Bush took office. Housing prices are crashing. Mortgage rates are rising. Foreclosures represent half or more of all home sales in some areas of the country. You hear about, oh, home sales are up. Yeah, it's because they're auctioning them off as foreclosures. As a result of the housing bust, $4 trillion in consumer wealth has been destroyed, and with another $4 trillion in all probability about to vanish, we're looking at a huge bursting bubble. The percentage of equity that Americans own in their homes has fallen below 50%, the lowest level since World War II, when we were climbing out of the Republican Great Depression as a result of the anti-depression policies of the New Deal. I mean, it's just amazing, and it goes on and on and on. So you're absolutely right. John McCain was speaking the truth. The economy is good if you're worth $100 million. Coming up Monday, I'll be at Radio Row at the Democratic Convention. Susie Turnbull, Jesse Jackson Jr., Linda Sanchez, Don Siegelman, David Sirota, Tom Hayden, all kinds of folks are going to drop by all next week. Be sure to tune in. And don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Get out there. Get active. Show up. Tag. You're it. Thanks a lot for being with us today. See you next week.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.